Liz!
Paul!
I've been excited about having a chance to do this interview with you. Appreciate you taking time to do this.
Oh, I'm equally as excited. Thank you.
All right, so tell everybody a little bit about yourself, the stuff that you're currently doing, and since you're the awesomest person, which is why you're the first person I'm doing this with, tell us about the awesomest thing that you've done, like, in the last year.
Oh, man. Oh, well, shucks. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Okay, for those who don't know, my name is Elizabeth Luddy. I have been working with Clone since I was 19 years old, and I am 30 years old this year. Can you believe it? Yeah, I know, right? So I got into Plone when I was working in college. It was part of a student internship where I was learning this new thing called CSS. Can you believe it? Yeah, I know. Tech comes a long way. And then it's amazing to me that I'm still doing it this year. I've done quite a few things with Plone. I've done stuff with intelligence in the government. I've done medical startups. I've done internal implementations, and I've been working as a consultant for the last 4 years now, based out of the Bay Area, so San Francisco, and currently working actually with a couple people that everyone might know, which is Eric Steele and Ryan Foster, and we're working on a startup which we're doing athlete management. So we're building a platform on top of Blown. Yeah, yeah, it's awesome. An athlete management platform. And it turns out that a lot of the problems that Elite Athletics has, it can be solved with proper content management and communication. So we actually just got back from training the Cleveland Cavaliers this weekend. So that was pretty exciting. Ooh. And we work a lot with the U.S. ski team and a lot of kind of big names coming in through. So we're very excited about it.
That's a cool story to tell.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome, and it's really fun too to see how once you get outside of the standard intranet domain, how many Plone problems apply, problems that Plone solves apply to so many different domains. It's just kind of being a little bit creative and using different wording when you sell it, to be honest.
I've been thinking about that a lot lately, and you know, we come from a background where we solve a certain class of problems. It is really natural for us to solve those kinds of problems about how people work together and stuff. And with other systems or other approaches, they don't even try to solve those problems.
Yeah, and I see I see a lot of this and throughout different domains and even different platforms outside of Plone is what I like to call is the shiny object syndrome, mm-hmm. where people who make decisions tend to be really drawn to pretty graphs and things like that, which IBM, for example, is amazing at doing. And then I think that we get down to the real problems, which is communication, knowledge management, which I know is a big word, but I mean, that is getting people out of email and onto systems. And that's where the real problem is. And so if we can really have that conversation and get decision makers to move beyond shiny object syndrome, then you start to really make change with people internally and when they're communicating with their customers as well. So it's very interesting.
Well, other than the Cavaliers and the sports platform, just within Plone, either the software or the community, what's one of the awesomest things you've done in the last year?
Oh, man, that's hard. I think I do a lot of shenanigans, but I think that the thing that I'm most proud of this year is where we've taken sponsorship. So yeah, it was basically kind of, I'm going to use the word abandoned, but there was just nobody in charge of it. Nobody was following up, and I started looking and seeing that, you know, the donations that we had coming in were these really great companies that just knew that it had to keep going. It's that, or they forgot to cancel it, but So then I was like, well, when I started the board this year, I really wanted to start getting our sprint funding together and actually spending money. And I kind of made some pretty brazen comments about like, well, if we spend $25,000, then we can raise $25,000. And then halfway into it, I was like, I had no idea what I was talking about. and then I was like, I need to get my stuff together and actually back this proclamation. And so I did, and we are back on track. And if we have our sponsorship continues right now, we're back to our 2009 levels of sponsorship, which is when we had the kind of the most going on in Plone. But already, we've already raised enough money to continue to do the springs next year that we did this year, which is the main thing, you know, taking it year by year and saying, well, we've got a big Plone 5 push and getting people to the right places at the right time and making sure that they're productive and then we'll actually see a really big release come. So I'm really excited for next year and hopefully all this stuff continues. And furthermore, the excitement that comes behind, you know, knowing that people still care enough about Plone that they just need to be asked in the right way. Right. It's just awesome. I love that. So it gives me a lot of faith.
The brazen comments thing, I've been watching those brazen comments and they were one of the three reasons that I thought that I wanted to start the interview series with you. So good job.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. So you're talking about CSS 100 years ago when you got started with Plone. How did you find Plone and what kind of stood out about it that said, hey, that's the thing that the 19-year-old version of me, the early Liz, wants to do?
Man, I wish I had a better answer for this, but I think it's important nonetheless. I think I came across Plone in the way that a lot of people do, which is like somebody paid me to do it. I mean, I was getting a blazing $8 an hour subsidized dun, dun, dun. By the government. But hey, I was 18, and it was a good thing. And I was like, well, this is really interesting. And I remember at the time, too, I wasn't technical at all. And that was, I think, most people's introduction to Plone is being handed the system where you can use the custom folder and you can do all these things. And you don't need to be technical. And then as I was 19 at the time trying to get my comp sci degree. And I didn't know shit. I didn't know anything about computer science. I think it's a little different these days, but then I definitely didn't know. And so as I learned computer science and started actually learning about coding and you know, this new object orientation idea, then I could actually kind of dig more and more into Plone and do technical things that way. And then when I graduated from college, I didn't actually expect to do Plone because I thought it was an educational institution thing. And I had a couple jobs and then just kind of your standard straight out of college. Boy, that was a bad decision job. And then I went to work in for BAE Systems where I was working in intelligence. And they were going to have me doing JSR 168 templates, and which was this portal standard for Java. And it was really big back then when the word portlet right. meant something else. And then luckily I was saved by a guy in a corner who's like, I heard you know a little bit of Python and I heard about this thing Plone. And he's like, do you think you want to do a Plone install? And I was like, well, fuck, yeah, I do. That's
you
cool.
jumped on him and threw your arms around him and said, I love
oh,
you.
Oh, yeah. I was like, save me. And so he kind of got me back into Plone. And from there, it's just kind of... continued. I've never had issues finding work and I always find interesting projects. So
that's yeah. the old, that's how the old you stumbled and bumbled your way into the world of Plone
yep.
and what it was that kind of attracted you and all that. Now the new you, what
new
is it about?
Me.
Yeah. The louder, older, et cetera, Liz,
yeah.
what is new Liz? What kind of piques your interest in Plone these days?
Yeah, being an adult is weird. I sometimes don't believe it myself. well, I think it comes down to is that a little bit of this thing of, well, if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. But I swear to God, I keep getting new projects and I try to go in with an open mind and say, and I do pick other platforms for smaller things for sure. But for these bigger clients, like I usually tend to have clients that last for several years and they have a big project. And I'm just, every time I do it, I'm like, man, all of this is solved by Plone already. And you can just get up and going. And I tend to specialize in startup types. So we do a lot of kind of one-off type throwaway things or I'm just trying to get people to a point where they can go for a round of funding or something like that.
Right.
So, you know, even if Plone isn't always the end game, which, it actually ends up usually being there for at least a few years while people kind of get their stuff together and flesh out an idea. It's really easy to get going with Plone. And so I really like that.
That's a good point that it's a good sales technique to say, listen, we know you're going to change later to some grown-up system with JSR, this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah.
But for now, we're just going to quickly get you something together, the executable prototype, and then they never throw it out.
Yeah, and I think that that's kind of how software works. And, yeah. and with startups, like, the ideas that people have, you know, people seem to think that startups are this thing where someone has an idea and 8 months later they're selling out to Facebook. But the reality of startups is that it's a four-year process, basically, to even kind of get going, at least that I've seen. I'd say 3 to 4 years is kind of, you know, this moving target, and you're following it constantly, and it really doesn't make sense to invest in a platform until you've figured out really what you're trying to sell and who your investors are and how much they care. So,
right.
yeah, it's a different reality, I think, than the social network would like us to believe.
Let's change gears a little bit away from technology over to the part that's kind of got me interested. I'm a little bit more of a Plone observer now than I used to be a few years ago, but just watching, it feels like, just community-wise at least, the world of Plone seems to have gotten a second wind. Am I wrong about that? You want to talk about that?
Oh, yeah. No, it definitely has. I think there's a lot of factors going into that.
Put on your anthropology hat and tell us what's going on. Analyze the species.
Man, if only I had actually taken an anthropology class in college. so I'll get to be the National Geographic casual observer anthropologist. So, yeah, we have a lot of things happening. One, we have energy on the development side. We have people like Rock Garbis and all these young people and from new countries. Like,
can you believe Brazil? You just said these young people?
I mean, young is, you know, 25, 30. That is young. That is really young.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I know. But these people who haven't become curmudgeon-y old developers yet, how about that?
Grandma Liz.
Yeah, that are actually taking ownership and kind of filling places where people have left. And I think there is a natural cycle in software where if you've been in a project for 10 years, like, you can still work on it, but you do tend to have a negative kind of outlook on things. It's just like any relationship, you know, like 7 years with one software, oof, you definitely get some kind of itch, right? So we've had people naturally kind of fade away either because their businesses have gone other ways or like they had twins, for example, you know, and just not able to donate as much time. And then what you have is kind of these young people who are like, well, nobody's going to do it, so I'm going to do it and I'm going to do it my way. And I think that's great. I think that that's something that we've needed for a long time. It's just kind of some fresh blood. And then they're very exciting and they get other people excited. And so that's helping a lot. In addition, with timing for a new release, I mean, basically, as soon as we said, no, seriously, we're going to do Plone 5, it was like, all right, everybody get your major changes lined up. And you have people who've been using the system for ages that are like, let's do it. And they're ready to rip things out and put new awesome things in. And then combine that with like a let's say a cash influx that we're putting in from the foundation of, okay, well, we want to see Plone 5 too. Let's make this happen. And all that couldn't happen without companies also being excited by Plone 5. So I know that myself and a few other people have been very adamant about going to these symposiums and things like that and really pushing on business leaders this time and saying, okay, well, we've had certain businesses fade out of the Plone community, so now it's time for everybody to step up and say, well, we're not all relying on Yarn, for example. Mm-hmm. And they really have, and that has just been phenomenal. So we're seeing businesses come back into and really, it's not that they didn't want to be there. It was just this notion of, well, you just, all you had to do was ask.
Indeed. And which, so, kind of comes over to a related question. We could talk a little bit about Plone the software and Plone the community and kind of the development of the software via the community. But there's also this other thing, Plone the foundation.
Yeah.
And you want to talk a little bit about how it's doing, how its governance is working and thriving?
Yeah, absolutely. So the key of the motto, let's say, of the foundation is to protect and promote Plone. And this is my first year being on the board, and I think that one of the main things that I had coming in was an agenda to say we need to do more of managing other things like sprints and sponsorship and stuff like that. So, you know, they do everything from handling GPL versus LGPL complaints and deciding what licenses new packages get. There's some trademark violation stuff that we handle on a regular basis. There are things like the contributor agreement, how do we doing legal things in that aspect. There's this notion that, the foundation also does a bunch of, marketing, and which would mean sending people to the right events and making sure that they get stickers or whatever it is that they need to hand out as well. And this year we've kind of, I don't want to say expanded our scope, but maybe taken on the whole bit of sponsorship and saying, well, now let's also be really aggressive as a foundation in collecting money so that we can make sprints happen, which is part of, you know, protecting Clone is making sure that it sticks around. And that's why people donate to the foundation, is so that we do these things and we can make them happen. So I think we've been doing a pretty good job this year.
Something to set on your calendar. I think that somewhere around May of next year will be about the 10-year anniversary of the wheels getting in motion for the creation of the Clone Foundation.
Oh, that's crazy.
So that's actually a pretty good success story to tell. Is I think you guys have done a job with the Clone Foundation in it changing hands away from the founders and the first generation and all that kind of stuff, and continuing and now getting a good second wind as well as the community. That's a neat story that not every community has.
Yeah, it's actually one that I've told a couple times this year, like I was at OSCON talking about it. Yeah, is how do you, you know, not all software makes it to 10 years, let alone, all right, we're at 12 now.
Yeah.
So, you know, how, what does that mean and what are the implications? And the surprising thing is one, now people are very much aware of open source, but they aren't aware of, you know, these young kids aren't aware of what happened in the late 90s, early 2000s with software being acquired, you know, all the legal battles. Like, this is, they're too young for that. So I spend a lot of time talking to new software projects about why a foundation is probably a good idea if they plan on sticking around. And, you know, that's something that I think that we should be more proud of and more boisterous about, because that is pretty crazy. And, I mean, there are things like SciPy, which has been around for just as long as we have, but is only now getting to the point where they're worried about protecting the code. So, you know, having these conversations with them and kind of being role models is something I hope that, you know, we can do and we can be for these other people that are getting started. So, yeah, it's pretty amazing.
I hope you can, too. You've got something valuable to pass on to others.
Yeah, exactly. And Clone people have always been really, really good about sharing everything anyway. Yeah. So.
Okay, next question. What are the major things, purely from your perspective, on Clone's plate for, say, the next couple of years?
So
zoom out a little bit.
Zooming out, yeah, the next major release is the biggest thing, and that's Clone 5, and it's Clone 5 in the new sense, not in the traditional sense, for those that were kind of around in 2007, had heard about Clone 5. We really have a lot of things to get rid of. We want to update our code base, get rid of a lot of legacy stuff. And that's something that's really hard and annoying and one of those jobs that nobody really wants to do, but I think that we've discovered is more important. We need to update, how we handle front end. CSS and JavaScript right now is just like through the roof and in terms of what they're doing and things that they're changing and how people do that. So we need to modernize with them. And I think we're actually doing this at a good point. CSS maybe is still a little bit in the air, but JavaScript is definitely going down a specific path now, which was different than maybe even a year ago, where CSS, we'll see about that. That's still a little bit up in the air, but we're in a point where we can modernize our front-end tools. We can get rid of legacy code, and we can do some of these things that are going to make it a better development platform for developers, but also kind of more friendly towards people who don't want to write any Python. So I'm really excited to see what happens in Clone 5. In addition, you know, moving on to frameworks that like CSS framework that is not custom to us, borrowing more tools instead of building our own, which isn't to say that the things that we have now suck or they aren't any good. It's just that we've kind of moved on and we've learned our lesson too about saying, well, let's borrow as much as we can and then, or not borrow, but, you know, use other people's stuff, integrate and learn our lessons from the past. So,
yeah. And plus the target audience that you're talking about, people who are similar to the 19-year-old Liz, are going to come up and they're going to, even if they don't know a certain technology, they will have heard it and kind of expected that they should know it because all the cool kids are doing that CSS yep. framework or that JavaScript JSMVC framework or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And furthermore, we have this opportunity that, you know, I think we've got kind of a bad rap from probably the Plone 3 release time is about when people started getting really angry or leaving or doing other things. And I think that we're reaching a generation of people who either have never heard of us or have forgotten that. And right. so that's awesome. That's a great opportunity to kind of rebrand ourselves and say, well, you've never heard of Plone, but it's actually pretty legit. So, you know, it's good. Hopefully we can capitalize on that opportunity. And I don't want to say relaunch, but just right. kind of attract somebody else. And I don't think we'll ever attract, you know, WordPress levels of people or things like that or those types of users. But we definitely can work on and targeting who our current user base right now and bringing people in and getting them used to it. So, yeah. And also the converting them from, you know, doing the conversion from front-end users who don't really know very much to, like, slowly going back in and filling out that story, which we kind of have been talking about a lot on the developer lists and trying to see what that is and how do you do that transition.
Well, other than the Plone 5 release, got any other things you think that either will be challenges or plans you got in the works, either at the foundation or level or community level or conferences or outreach or anything else that looks interesting for the next couple of years?
Well, yeah, we do have Plone.com hopefully coming out pretty soon here, which has been a probably 3-year process or something like that. It's been a very long time. So one of the challenges I think that we have coming up next is to figure out marketing and how that works when you don't have, like, let's say a BDFL company. Like, we don't have a major company that's really pushing us right now. We just have a lot of companies working together and doing marketing in that sense is much different. And I think that we kind of get to figure that out because there's not a lot of examples for us to pull from. So how do we do marketing? And I know that if we had better marketing, we could actually do quite a bit more. I mean, I've just used Salesforce for the first time and I was like, God, if Salesforce can sell all this, geez, we could do anything we wanted to. So we just need to, that's our biggest challenge, I think, in the next year or maybe even two, is figuring out how that works and what the politics are behind it and making sure that, you know, we try things and abandon them when they don't work quickly. And that's interesting, too, because marketing is a different personality than the open source world. So I really don't have any answers for that yet. But I definitely think that that's our biggest challenge. And Plone.com is the biggest start. But other than that, I think that those are my two main concerns over the next couple of years, is getting those going getting that going and seeing what happens.
Well, it's interesting that you kind of tied them together a little bit and viewed Plone 5 as a little bit of a relaunch. It might give you a chance to sharpen up the story and get some consensus on the storytelling for Plone and refactor it. You know, you're refactoring the code and tossing out cruft, but maybe there's cruft in the story.
Yeah, I definitely think there's cruft in the story, and it's something that I hope we can figure out. And one thing that we're trying, actually, that I think is pretty cool is Heidi Reinke from University of Wisconsin Oshkosh. She has a marketing class, and for example, for her project this semester, her kids are going to do a marketing plan for Plone. So
yes.
Yeah, it's like so open source is, you know, it can happen in all these different ways. So they'll get a nice little challenge and do lots of interviews and all these things and then make a proposal. So it's kind of nice too, because you get a third party perspective, you know, somebody coming in and they're learning, we're going to learn from them. I'm just fascinated to see how this little experiment works out. I hope that it turns up some pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah. And then all the kids will get hired by Plone companies a week before finals.
Hopefully. That's ideal, right? Because we could sure use some marketing people.
We could. Yeah. Plone companies aren't exactly overflowing with that. Some are pretty good. Some are pretty good, but not all.
It's not our MO for sure.
Indeed. Okay, let's close it up with the RV that you had at PyCon was definitely a new pie, a new low, depending on how you looked at it.
I'll go with low.
I just thought it was absolutely fabulous. But you set the bar so high now. You got any other shenanigans up your sleeve? Anything that people should watch out for?
I mean, there. Paul did mention to the board about having a poutine truck at in PyCon Montreal, but we'll see how it goes. I know that Matthew Wilkes and I have constantly begged the board for a hot air balloon, which a custom hot air balloon is only $10,000. It's not that bad. You just need somebody to fly it. And I happen to know that Carol, who is on the board, is like two lessons or something from her hot air balloon pilot license. So if you see her, ask her about that story. It's fascinating.
Wow. That would set the bar pretty high.
Yeah. Indeed.
Of course, the insurance will be pretty high as well.
What's this insurance thing?
Yes. RV didn't have any insurance.
So besides that, we actually got rejected twice for that, but we'll keep going on that one. And then as far as shenanigans, I'm actually really focused on getting Plan 5 out. We'll see. No crazy shenanigans yet, unless that means removing a huge part of core and dealing with all of the repercussions of that. But we'll see.
Well, how many plone trips have you had in the past 12 months?
I've done three full-on sprints. I've done two non-plone conferences talking about plone. And then for work, I've basically been on the road two or three times a month all year. So I'm ready to actually not take a trip for a while.
Well, when you do, and people want to get their dose of the fabulous Liz Letty experience, what's your next plone travel?
Oh, man, I don't actually have any plone travel planned yet.
Yes,
I would really
PyCon,
like.
Huh?
Yeah, I would really love to make it to Arnhem. There's a big sprint in November in Arnhem, a big Plone 5 push, which I think that some people even mentioned staying there for a month. Can you believe that? Sprinting for a month. Because they really wanted to push Plone 5 out by the end of the year. So that's going to be a riot if anybody wants to go there. I'd love to try to make it there. If not, we're hoping to have another. There's always the Chiopina Sprint in February, which is in Bodega Bay. So I will be there. Or at least it has been. It was in Seattle last year. So I'm sure it'll be somewhere here on the West Coast. And I've talked extensively for years about having a sprint in Hawaii, and I'm going to make it happen next year. So. Yes.
The Honolulu. Even if you have to take a hot air balloon to get there.
So you just got to do what you got to do.
All right. Well, Liz, I really appreciate you taking the time. And we will maybe we'll do a recap in a couple of years and see what your future Liz thinks of all the predictions of the present Liz.
Oh, well, I apologize to future Liz in the past. From the past.
All right. Thanks
Thank
a lot, Liz.
Thank you very much, Paul.